Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, February 6th, 2022, and I'll begin with the most recently published articles. Anonymous tips lead to arrest and burglary of San Angelo veterans' military memorabilia. By Elena Edgen, published February 9th. Three anonymous tips helped police make an arrest 2 weeks after a San Angelo veterans' home was burglarized, according to an arrest affidavit. On January 25th, police arrived to a residence on Lexington Place to a reported burglary. Clayton LaRue, the homeowner and an Air Force veteran of 20 years, discovered his tools, medals, and other military memorabilia had been stolen. LaRue, a Goodfellow Air Force Base Master Sergeant who retired in 2013, posted an open letter to the intruder on Facebook. In the letter, he mentioned the tools were easily replaceable, but the military gear you stole from me is much more significant. It can never be truly replaced. That gear included uniforms and memorabilia from his stations across the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, South Korea, and Afghanistan. You took everything I had hauled around for month after month over there while I served my country, each and every step filled with sweat and pain, Clayton stated in the letter. I think the nail in the coffin was stealing my medals. You stole all of my military memorabilia when it meant literally nothing to you and it meant the world to me. His sister, Selena LaRue, added that he was devastated in a January 27th interview. He spent half his life in the military. It is so important to him and who he is, she said. It's not fair what happened to him. They took 20 years of his life. As the investigation continued, police found surveillance footage of a maroon Jeep Patriot stopping in an alleyway. A man who was driving and a woman left the vehicle and entered the open garage. They made several trips from the garage to the Jeep, according to the arrest affidavit. The Jeep had damage to the fender on its front passenger side and a very distinct dirt line, records state. Two anonymous tips identified the woman, and another tip showed a photograph of a possible suspect involved in various porch thefts and burglaries in the area. The Jeep's registered owner identified the two people who used the car, according to the arrest affidavit. On Tuesday, February 8th, the Jeep, driven by the woman, was stopped for a traffic violation. Investigators recognized the Jeep's features as identical to the one used in the burglary, records state. Elizabeth Elaine Usury, 27, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of burglary of a habitation. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $35,000 bond as of 2 p.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Police are searching for the driver in connection to the case. Breckenridge man arrested after outcry of child sexual abuse in San Angelo. By Elena Edgen, published February 9th. A Breckenridge man who was jailed in Stevens County has been arrested after an outcry of child sexual abuse in San Angelo, according to an arrest affidavit. On December 13th, 2021, Tom Green County deputies met with a child who made an outcry of sexual abuse. They stated a man, 17 at the time, had sexually assaulted them around October 15, 2019, records state. The child was 10 at the time. Through interviews, investigators learned the child had been sexually assaulted multiple times by the man, according to the arrest affidavit. On January 5th, deputies met with the man, who was incarcerated in Stevens County on unrelated charges. He told officers he did sexually assault the child in October 2019, sometime before Halloween in San Angelo, according to the arrest affidavit. John Warner Linden, 20, was arrested February 7th on suspicion of aggravated sexual assault of a child. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $150,000 bond as of 11:15 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo Fire Chief Brian Dunn set to retire after 32 years of service, by Rosanna Frere, published February 8th. Fire Chief Brian Dunn, who has served the San Angelo Fire Department for 32 years, will retire at the end of February, according to a city news release. Dunn's 21 years of leadership as fire chief began January 2001 at age 33. He will retire from the position on February 25th, 2022, a news release stated, which highlighted Dunn's education and experience in managing San Angelo's fire department for decades. In addition to applying for department ranks when the opportunities became available, Dunn's educational achievements certainly did not hinder his chances at chief, the release stated. At that time, Dunn had a master's degree in management, a bachelor's in finance, and an associate degree in fire protection technology. He has since added certified public manager to that list, having completed Texas State University's Certified Public Manager program in 2010. According to the release, among his accomplishments during his tenure, Dunn established an ongoing mutual aid agreement with Goodfellow Air Force Base for firefighting and hazmat, developed paramedic training program with Howard College to produce paramedics for SAFD and region, reduced city's insurance services office fire rating from class 4 to class 1, ultimately saving citizens more than $5 million per year in insurance premiums, helped bring Texas State Firefighter Olympics to San Angelo in 2009 and 2017, managed budget of more than $20 million for fire department, fire prevention, and emergency management, led committee from Fire Department, Howard College, and Concho Valley Council of Governments in applying for and receiving a $1.2 million EDA grant to help fund a new fire training center, hired 217 new firefighters since he became chief. "It's not a one-man show," Dunn said in a news release. "There are multiple players who help accomplish what we need to do. I depend on a lot of different people to help me accomplish the tasks I've been assigned. I'll miss the people I see and work with on a daily basis," he said. "I'm very thankful for the friendships and bonds that I've formed with all the people I've had the privilege of working with." The city noted Dunn's leadership was critical during two Gulf Coast hurricane evacuations, as well as the FLDS crisis in 2008, when approximately 500 women and children had to be moved to Fort Concho and the Coliseum, and the 2011 Wildcat fire that burned around 158,000 acres right outside the city limits. "We are deeply grateful to Chief Dunn and the many years of service he has given to our community," City Manager Daniel Valenzuela said in the news release. "He leaves behind a long list of accomplishments that have had a tremendous impact on the fire department and the city. I wish him the absolute best on the next chapter of his life." Dunn's successor has yet to be announced. As for him, there are no plans other than to enjoy his retirement for the time being, according to the release. Longtime Standard Times columnist Rick Smith dies at 67. Published February 7th. Rick Smith, a longtime Standard Times staff writer and beloved columnist, died Sunday, February 6th, 2022, after a battle with dementia. He was 67. Smith's columns were a fixture on the front page of the Standard Times for years, and he won numerous awards throughout his career. When he wasn't finding stories in San Angelo, he traveled around the state looking for adventures he could share with his readers. Rick was the best writer the Standard Times ever had, but he also was one of the best people ever to work at the newspaper. I can't think of a single person who didn't like him, former San Angelo Standard Times managing editor Jack Cowan said. Rick could take the most routine event and turn it into a story everyone wanted to read. He was clever, creative, and hilarious. A couple of generations of Standard Times readers are sad right now, and I'm going to find some of his old columns to help me get over it. Smith was born in San Angelo on July 20th, 1954. He graduated from Central High School in 1972 and Angelo State in 1976. He married June Ann Hubble on June 18, 1977. They had two daughters, Anne and Catherine. Smith began his career at the Standard Times in 1973 as a part-time sports writer, but he found his true calling when he landed a job as a columnist. With the exception of short stints in Austin, Sherman, and Amarillo, Smith spent the majority of his 40-year career in San Angelo. He served as a Standard Times columnist for nearly 25 years. Smith retired in 2015. Rick was a truly gifted writer and storyteller, the Standard Times editor Paul Harris said. I was amazed how he could make you feel like you were sitting next to him on a road trip, listening to him tell a fun story. I admired him greatly and learned so much from him just by reading his column. El Paso Times regional editor Tim Archuleta, a former news editor at the Standard Times, echoed what Harris and so many of Smith's friends and colleagues had to say about his life and work. Rick Smith earned a reputation as a great American storyteller by taking the time to see the extraordinary in the ordinary. He recognized that everyone had a story to tell. He was willing to listen and then share what he learned from people living in West Texas, Archuleta said. Smith was here for the community's most important moments, but he didn't get his satisfaction from the fame that comes from being beloved. He was a humble man who loved his wife June, his two daughters, and West Texas, Archuleta said. He should be remembered as a classic community storyteller. Smith spent his final days with his family by his side in Silverton, Oregon. A funeral service will be held in San Angelo on April 23rd at the International Water Lily Collection in Civic League Park, one of Smith's favorite places, his wife said. More details on the service will be released at a later time. Rick Smith always managed to find the magic in the ordinary. By Candace Cooksey Fulton, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published February 7th. Rick Smith was the best friend I ever had. I don't have the qualifications to be the best friend Rick ever had. I know. It wasn't fair. Rick deserved a better best. It's not fair I'm writing this now, remembering Rick. For one thing, he would hate, hate, hate the attention. For another, I can't do him justice. And for a third, Rick's the guy who extolled our qualities when it was time for us to be remembered. He was the friend. We were the friended. But here we are. Rick died Sunday, February 6th, 2022, after being stricken more than 5 years ago with frontotemporal dementia, FTD, also called PICS, a degenerative disease doctors have called the cruelest of dementias. FTD typically affects its victims before age 60, is untreatable and incurable. How very unfair it is that one of the first telling symptoms of FTD would be that a genius wordsmith like Rick lost his words and the ability to magically string sentences and phrases together. For 25 years, until 2016, when Rick retired because of the FTD diagnosis, He was the community affairs writer for the San Angelo Standard Times, one of the finest, most prolific, and beloved writers of the paper's history. Rick's three times a week Standard Times columns grabbed us by the heart and took us where we needed to go, to find lost dogs, search for fields of Texas wildflowers, seek the brightest, most elaborate Christmas lights, or follow Texas storms. Rick wrote about our history, contemplated our future, but best of all, he gave us the present, little life slices to talk about, to laugh about, concerns to share, or, when charity was in order, make a suitable donation. He had a knack for showing us our best selves. I remember when. My friendship with Rick goes back almost 50 years. In a way, I can claim being there from an improbable start of a grand career, the winter of 1973, when Angelo State University freshman Ricky Smith sauntered into the Rampage office offering a hilarious bit of column prose to editor Gail Childers. I was a junior Rampage associate editor, and I think I thought, who is this guy? I am glad I got to find out. In the summer of 73, we became the best of friends. We explored the remote, dusty roads of West Texas in Rick's blue Toyota Jeep. We kayaked on the Concho and drank Dr. Pepper's straight from the bottle while taking turns on an old Royal manual typewriter, pounding out what we hoped would be the great American novel. It might have been we had taken it past the third chapter. The memories have lasted a lifetime. Some, including Rick, would say, my greatest contribution to the friendship came in the fall of 1973. After just a little bit of convincing, I introduced Rick to June Hubble from Ballinger, my fifth-floor women's high-rise next-door neighbor. It was a fortunate match. Sickness, health, richer, poorer, good and better. Rick and June were married nearly 45 years. Rick's columns and feature stories won Associated Press Managing Editor Awards year after year, though Rick seemed less impressed than anyone by the honors. Truth of the matter, those were old news, and there were plenty of stories out there waiting to be written. Rick, at his worst, was better than most of us. At his best, which he was often enough, Rick was magical. The play. Do put one check in the dream of writing something with a great American adjective connection. In 1978, as a student in Dr. Ray Carver's playwriting class, Rick wrote a musical play, Sideshow, a salute to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Texas-born and all-but-forgotten Vice President, John Nance Garner. In typical genius approach, Rick employed the idea of a circus sideshow to suggest the freakish aspects of politics. Sideshow was performed in the Eisenhower Theater of the Kennedy Center of Performing Arts in April 1978. As writer of the play's script, music, and lyrics, Rick won the American College Theater Festival's Best Play and the David Library Award. Never in the ACTF's 10-year history had one person received the double honor. In 1992, a reprise of Sideshow was staged at ASU with original cast members, Brent Scott as Garner, Craig Torrence, FDR, and Carlton Buddy Smith as the Supreme Court Justice, coincidentally, the second oldest living human being in the world. That was the only time I ever saw the play, and sitting right there in the audience with the playwright himself, I was awestruck. Its satirical look at politics was as relevant in the 1990s as it would have been in the 1940s or the 1970s, and in some ways even more relevant now. Here's Humble for you. A few years after that, sitting on the Smith's patio, telling stories and sharing laughs, I said, I'd like to read the script of Sideshow. I particularly wanted to see the lyrics of Buddy Smith's oldest living human being song. We don't have one, June said. I don't know if there's one anywhere anymore. For Rick's sake. Part of Rick's magic was the way he deflected attention from himself and channeled it onto others. Rick could find the heart of a story, then let the details make it real. He could ask the hard questions gently and then step back and get out of the way of the answers. Rick's key to writing a good, okay, great column was very close to Forrest Gump's mama's theory that life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. The usual Rick trick to that was not to be disappointed. I expected Rick to be my forever friend. We came close. Our Dr. Pepper straight from the bottle, enjoyed from the banks of the Concho, gave way to Friday night gatherings on the Smith's patio or around their fireplace while our children played in the yard or next room. Old friends blended with new friends, and those of us who gathered each felt special to be part of the group. Rick was generally, mostly, the appreciative audience for those gatherings, seasoning the conversations with well-timed one-liners. He laughed, sympathized, empathized, and on rare occasions, advised. We've missed Rick for a while now, and now we'll miss him forever, I guess. But to paraphrase Rick's sister-in-law, Amanda Shepherd's Facebook post, maybe with what we have been through, we will value those we love more. Maybe we will realize we need each other. And we will realize we need to take care of each other, the spirit as well as the body. Maybe, and this is me now, in that Rick Smith special style, we'll appreciate more of the gatherings of friends, take long walks around the lily pad ponds, travel dusty roads to find fields of bluebonnets, browse through downtown bookstores, and in turn, read more books. Books that make us think, understand, be kinder and gentler. Maybe we won't think too hard about what might have been. Maybe we'll see what Rick called a different level, a higher plane. And yes, he meant plane. Always putting a little magic in the ordinary. At this point in our broadcast, I'd like to do something that's a little unorthodox. As a person who grew up in San Angelo and reading Rick Smith's columns, I found that they were very entertaining and they covered a wide range of areas and topics. So I've gone into the archives, and for those of our San Angelo listeners who may be tuning in, you may enjoy this. You may remember this particular column. And those who are in the Permian Basin area or far west Texas listeners, it gives you an idea of the kind of writer that Rick Smith was, just very down to earth, a person who just generally, he liked to write about people and he liked to write about places. So I've chosen at random a column that is actually a column from the month of February. This particular column is from Sunday, February 27th, 1994. Snow and Maggie keep us busy. Time for my monthly newsletter to homesick San Angeloans. Send a copy to your long-lost relatives and friends who've moved away so they'll know we're weathering the winter. I didn't write last month because, frankly, nothing happened in January. As a month, it was a waste of time. Not so February. Talk about excitement. First, are you ready for this? It snowed. That's right, snow. Right here in West Texas. Maybe it snows often where you live now. Not here. In fact, our early February snow may have been the only time we'll see the stuff until next winter. San Angelo has the nicest snow. It created the perfect winter wonderland for a single day, then melted and disappeared before it could become a bother. I suppose the biggest news of the month was Margaret Thatcher's visit. The former Great Britain Prime Minister lectured at Angelo State University. Seating was limited, and her lecture was the hottest ticket in town. People in some cities fight over Reba McEntire tickets. We queue up to see Margaret Thatcher. Her best line? When she referred to the American Revolution as that unpleasantness around 1776. We have crime here, yes. But many Texans have a deep-seated desire to do something about the problem. And that's exactly how one brave soul captured a gunman, by seating himself on him. After the gunman shot a convenience store clerk in Wall, you remember Wall, just down Highway 87 from Vancourt, a San Antonio truck driver held the suspect until sheriff's deputies arrived. He, the suspect, tried to get into his pickup, but the truck driver kept him from leaving by pushing the driver's door closed, a deputy said. He, truck driver, got tired of closing the door, so he used a reasonable amount of force to throw him, the suspect, to the ground and sit on him until help arrived. Speaking of sitting on problems, more than a year after they began searching for a site for the new jail, Tom Green County commissioners still haven't made up their minds where to put the thing. The city's gotten into the act, offering the county different land deals, which prompted one county official to remark, "The question is, even if they, the city, offered us the moon, is the moon a good place to put a jail?" With questions like that, who needs answers? More happened in February, of course, much more than I can include in this short letter. So call your mother. She'll fill you in. And don't forget where you came from, or the way back home. Once again, column written by Rick Smith, Sunday, February 27th, 1994. San Angelo to close all traffic on Middle Concho due to road erosion for six-week repair. By Elena Edgen, published February 7th. Update. Middle Concho Park will be closed to all traffic, including pedestrian traffic, until repairs are done, according to a city news release on Monday, February 7th. The work, which started February 1st, is expected to last 6 weeks, pending weather delays. During this time, Middle Concho Drive, Middle Concho Park, and the Archery Range will be closed to all vehicular and pedestrian traffic, the release stated. We ask for your patience and understanding as our crews work to quickly complete this project. Original story. A section of Middle Concho Drive and the surrounding area will be closed to vehicle traffic for 6 weeks next month as crews work to replace a deteriorated culvert, according to a city news release on January 10th. Starting February 1st, Middle Concho Drive, Middle Concho Park, and the Archery Range will be closed to vehicle traffic. City crews will be replacing a drainage culvert near the park entrance, which is expected to take 6 weeks, pending delays. While people will not be able to drive through the area, a walking path will be made around the work zone. People can use the path to access the park and archery range. The culvert had deteriorated and began causing erosion to the side of the road, the release stated. Grand jury indicts San Angelo driver after drunk driving crash with 3-year-old passenger. By Elena Edgen, published February 7th. When San Angelo police arrived at a late October crash, they saw a Jeep that had hit a power pole hard enough to activate its airbags. The driver, who recently was indicted by a grand jury, told them he didn't know what he hit, though the pole damaged the Jeep's roof, according to court documents released February 1st. About 11:33 p.m., October 30th, 2021, police arrived at a car crash in the 1900 block of Live Oak Street. A man driving a Jeep Liberty crashed into a power pole, according to court documents. When police arrived at the crash, they discovered a 3-year-old child in the vehicle. During the investigation, an officer noted an open 24-ounce can of Budweiser, along with multiple empties and full ones, in the passenger side. The vehicle also smelled of alcohol, and the driver was slurring and had glassy eyes, according to court documents. The driver told officers he had been heading home from his nephew's house, a distance of about 3 miles, and did not know what happened or what he hit, according to an arrest affidavit. When a police officer asked how many beers the man drank, he responded with one or two 24-ounce beers, records state. Police conducted a sobriety test in which the man was asked to walk, stand, and then stand on one leg. In these tests, the investigator believed the man showed multiple indicators of being intoxicated. This included staggering and not following instructions, according to court documents. An intoxilizer device test showed the man had a blood alcohol level of 0.145%. Both the state and federal limit to legally drive is 0.08%, in which a person is considered impaired or under the influence. Claudio Cortez Jr. was arrested October 31st on suspicion of driving while intoxicated with a child passenger younger than 15 years old. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center hours later on a $10,000 bond, according to online court records. In January, a grand jury indicted Cortez on the same charge, which is a state jail felony, punishable by up to 2 years in jail. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for February, according to online court records. Two men arrested after allegedly shooting at occupied building on Knickerbocker Road, by Elena Edgen, published February 7th. Two men have been arrested after shots were fired at a building Friday on Knickerbocker Road, according to a news release from the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office. At about 5:59 p.m. Friday, February 4th, deputies arrived in the 900 block of Knickerbocker Road where two men were reported to be firing guns, according to the release. Deputies learned that two Hispanic men had fired from a black Ford Expedition at an occupied building. One of them reportedly left the vehicle and shot more rounds before returning to the Ford, according to the release. Investigators stopped the vehicle in the 7,000 block of Knickerbocker and found a handgun and less than 2 ounces of marijuana, the release stated. Two men in the vehicle were arrested. Rodolfo Mendoza, 26, of Laredo, was arrested on suspicion of possession of marijuana, a traffic misdemeanor, and 3 city warrants. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $1,540 bond on Sunday, according to online jail records. Alan Sanchez, 29, of San Antonio, was arrested on suspicion of deadly conduct, discharge firearm, and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. He remained in the Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,000 bond as of 3 p.m. Monday, according to online jail records. This is an active investigation and more charges could be pending, according to the release. Angelo State University student struck multiple times by gunfire after fight with 4 men, by Elena Edgen and John Tufts. Published February 7th. San Angelo police are investigating a weekend shooting in which an Angelo State University student suffered multiple gunshot wounds after a fight with 4 unknown Hispanic men, according to a news release. An ASU student was injured by gunfire early Sunday, February 6th, during an off-campus shooting in the 3300 block of TLC Way, according to a university alert email sent to students. According to a police department news release, officers learned the student, a 19-year-old man, had been shot several times below the waist. He left the scene in a private vehicle headed toward the hospital. Police said they were able to make contact with the victim and began providing first aid. Medics from the San Angelo Fire Department arrived and transported the man to Shannon Medical Center for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries, according to the release. Investigators learned that a physical altercation took place in the roadway between four Hispanic men in the 3300 block of TLC Way. One of the four Hispanic men discharged a firearm and shot the victim below his waist, striking him multiple times, according to the release. Police were told the alleged shooter and the three other men entered a vehicle and fled the area prior to the officer's arrival. As of 2 p.m. Monday, February 7th, no arrests have been made regarding the shooting. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact the San Angelo Police Department's desk duty officer at 325-481-2696 or the non-emergency dispatch at 325-657-4315. People can also utilize the P3 Crime Stoppers app to disclose information and remain anonymous. Brandon Lawson made a 911 call 9 years ago, then went missing. His remains may have been found. By Elena Edgen, published February 4th. Nearly a decade after a San Angelo father of four disappeared, his remains may have been found, according to a page dedicated to finding him. Brandon Lawson, 26, disappeared one night in August 2013. Since his mysterious disappearance along a lonely stretch of highway in Coke County, his family has refused to give up their search for answers. About 2 p.m. Friday, February 4th, the Help Find Brandon Lawson Facebook page, run by his family, posted that the presumed remains of Lawson had been found. Recently, one of those advocates led a small search party in the vicinity of Brandon's last known location, the post stated, mentioning the party had possibly found his clothing. In our hearts, we know it's Brandon, Lawson family says. The Texas Rangers conducted a search that ultimately led them to discover human remains in this same area. Although DNA tests are needed to confirm identification, in our hearts, we know that it is Brandon, the message stated. The post, as of 4:41 p.m. Friday, had been shared more than 900 times, with nearly 600 comments and 3,200 reactions. For years, we have gone to great lengths to search the area of Brandon's last known whereabouts, a message stated. Our main focus throughout this entire ordeal has been to bring Brandon home so that he can finally rest in peace and our family can have the answers we have prayed for. The family hopes DNA evidence will prove the remains belong to Lawson, bringing the case to an end. In a message to the Standard Times, Tom Greene County Sheriff Nick Hanna confirmed that human remains had been found and were being tested. Should they prove to belong to Lawson, it would provide closure to Hanna, too. In 2013, Hanna, then a Texas Ranger, was a lead investigator in the case. According to one of Lawson's loved ones, Hanna thought Brandon's body was somewhere off U.S. 277, large portions of which are desolate and drought-prone terrain, spotted green with thorny mesquite and cactus. It's an environment largely inhabited by rattlesnakes and feral hogs. Hanna provided information on the efforts to locate Brandon in Bront, searches that included two DPS helicopters ATVs, Texar, 6 cadaver dogs, and 4 different agencies at one time or another, Hannah wrote in an email from 2018. As of 6 p.m. Friday, February 4th, authorities had released no details to the public yet, confirming what the results of the DNA testing had shown. What we know about the mysterious disappearance of Brandon Lawson. On August 8, 2013, Lawson briefly returned to his San Angelo home after not coming home the previous night. Ladessa Lofton, his girlfriend of 10 years, mother of their 3 children, and stepmom to Lawson's eldest daughter, was infuriated by his absence because of his recent drug relapse. The two fought and he left. Their fight that night, Lofton said in a 2018 interview, was the result of several factors. He had been working over 60 hours a week. Their youngest son was only a few months old, and they were stressed. For a long time, I blamed myself, she said. She also regrets the words spoken during their fight. I will never get those words back. Brandon Lawson 911 call depicted last moments before he went missing. Around 11:30 p.m. August 8th, Lawson called his father and mentioned he was heading to his parents' house in Crawley, about 3 hours away from San Angelo. Around 12:30 a.m., Lawson called his brother, Kyle, asking for help because he ran out of gas. His last known location was along U.S. Highway 277, north of San Angelo, and right before the West Texas town of Bront. 3 expletives are chasing me out of town, Brandon told his brother. When Brandon said it was the Mexicans in the neighborhood, Kyle asked if he was tripping, if it was drugs causing him to hallucinate, but Brandon denied it was all in his head. Kyle went over to Brandon and Lofton's house, less than a mile away, to get a gas can, then headed out of town with his wife at the time and 4-year-old son. The brothers kept making calls to one another, but Kyle said Brandon wouldn't have a full conversation with him, more or less saying a sentence or two before hanging up. A look at phone records. 12:51. Kyle called Brandon and left a voicemail. 12:51. Brandon called Lofton, but she didn't answer. After their fight and lacking a wall charger, Lofton had taken her phone to her car to charge. 12:52. Kyle's wife called Brandon, then called again. 12:54. Kyle called Brandon. 12:57. Brandon called his neighbor. 12:58. Brandon called Kyle and called again. 12:58. The neighbor called 3 times. 12:59. Kyle called Brandon. 1:04. The dispatcher at the nursing facility called Brandon back, trying to get more information about his location and what was wrong. She left a voicemail and called once more. 1:09. Brandon called Kyle 3 times. 1:12. Kyle called Brandon 3 times. 1:15. Brandon called Kyle twice, the last calls he made from his phone. 1:19. All calls made to his phone begin going straight to voicemail. In one call, Brandon told Kyle he was running through a field and bleeding. Kyle thought he tripped or had a minor accident, according to a 2018 interview. At 12:50 a.m., Brandon called 911, which at the time rang at the local nursing home in Robert Lee. Among a series of unclear statements, he told the dispatcher he ran out of gas, was in the middle of a field, that he needed help, and asked, please hurry. How the investigation into Brandon Lawson's disappearance began. A Coke County deputy found Brandon's pickup just after 1 a.m. after dispatch received a 911 call from a trucker along U.S. 277 that reported Brandon's F-150 obstructing traffic by being over the white line. Kyle arrived as the deputy pulled up. Kyle, in a 2018 interview, said Brandon told him, "I can see you. I'm right here," although Kyle couldn't see his brother anywhere. With an active warrant out of Johnson County for possession with intent to deliver, Kyle assumed Brandon was hiding to avoid getting in trouble with the police. Neither Kyle or the deputy knew about the 911 call at the time. "At the time, I didn't feel like he was in any danger," Kyle said. After Kyle and the deputy finished talking, Kyle decided to drive away and park up the road a bit to see if his brother would come out once the deputy left. He waited for 30 to 45 minutes, then left for San Angelo. Kyle returned August 9th at 5 a.m. and called for Brandon, who did not appear. On August 11th, the deputy reported a small private search team gathered at 8 a.m. and ended their search about noon. The only sign of anyone being in that area was a spot under a tree where it appeared someone sat down close to the roadway within eyesight of where Lawson's pickup broke down, the report states. The Texas Rangers joined the investigation on August 12th and came to the conclusion that Brandon was no longer in Coke County. Lofton reported Brandon is missing on August 13th. Law enforcement used aerial searches, thermal imaging, and search parties in the area around Bront, but found no signs of Brandon. As the years went by, three theories rose. Brandon disappeared willingly. He was harmed, or succumbed to the elements. Some factors in those theories included that he cashed out his 401k, he had a new job to start the following Monday, and a harsh drought hit the area that year. In 2018, his father, brother, and Lofton agreed they wanted to find him, no matter what. "All along, I've stated the fact that I would like to find Brandon and bring him home where he belongs," Brad Lawson, his father, said in 2018. "The chances of us finding Brandon alive are almost none. And I understand that, and I realize that. But he's not here. He deserves to be brought home to his family." Step out of your comfort zone. San Angelo Coffee Shop offering Coffee Flights by Rosanna Frere, published February 4th. Do you order the same drink every time you visit a coffee shop? The JC Coffee House in San Angelo is encouraging you to step out of your comfort zone and try some of their coffee flights. The flights consist of four 16-ounce drinks of the customer's choosing and can also be paired with pastries. Pick four coffees for $25. Pick four with two pastries for $30. Pick four with three pastries for $35. Pick four with four pastries for $40. JC Coffee House opened at 3025 Southwest Boulevard on January 17th and is operated by Shell Smith, her husband Scott, daughter Kendry Perez, son Mason Clayton, and his wife Addison Clayton. Less than a month later, the business expanded its menu by offering flights. "We wanted to do something fun and different and give people the opportunity to come in and try an assortment of coffees, teas, and pastries," Shell Smith said. "It also helps our customers get out of their comfort zone drinks and try some new flavors." The shop is open from 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The business will be hosting a grand opening celebration Friday, February 11th, with raffles, games, and new menu items, including frappes, fruit cups, wraps, and more. "We wanted to slowly add to our menu from the date of opening until our grand opening, where we could learn as we grew," Smith said. Some items that have been recently added to the menu include pizza grilled cheese, mac and cheese grilled cheese, and a soup of the day. Shannon Hospital will require COVID vaccines in February for all staff and volunteers, by John Tufts, published February 4th. Administrators at Shannon Medical Center have told hospital staff and volunteers they will need to be vaccinated for the coronavirus beginning next week after a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision. Last month, the Supreme Court halted enforcement of one of President Joe Biden's signature efforts to combat COVID-19, ruling that his administration doesn't have the authority to impose vaccine or testing requirements on employers that would have covered tens of millions of Americans. Although Congress has indisputably given the Occupational Safety and Health Administration power to regulate occupational dangers, it has not given that agency the power to regulate public health more broadly, the court wrote. Requiring the vaccination of 84 million Americans selected simply because they work for employers with more than 100 employees certainly falls in the latter category. In a second unsigned opinion, however, the court permitted a vaccine mandate on people employed at healthcare facilities that receive federal funding through the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. The government, the court said, appeared to have that authority, at least when it comes to requiring workplace changes for medical care it pays for. That measure affects about 10 million workers, including employees at Shannon Medical Center. This includes all clinical and non-clinical staff, licensed practitioners, students, trainees, volunteers, and contracted staff that work within any entity of our health system and interact with patients or other staff members, according to a message received by the hospital's approximately 3,750 employees. A spokesperson for Shannon Hospital said medical and religious exemptions would be allowed, but those who receive an exemption were required to wear a mask at work and at all hospital events. The Standard Times reached out to Shannon Medical Center and asked what repercussions hospital staff might face should they fail to comply with getting vaccinated, as well as how many of its employees had requested waivers, and whether administrators were concerned they might lose staff or volunteers as a result of the requirement. A hospital spokesperson on Monday said they had no additional information to offer. While the repercussions to Shannon medical staff were unknown as of Friday, February 4th, the hospital itself might face consequences for noncompliance from federal regulators. As a licensed healthcare facility that must follow the federal regulations of CMS, Shannon must comply with this requirement, a message from the hospital stated. This rule applies to all healthcare facilities like Shannon that provide care to Medicare and Medicaid patients. To comply with the federal mandate, all eligible staff must receive at least one vaccine dose by Friday, February 11th, and be fully vaccinated for the coronavirus by March 11th. Noncompliance could jeopardize our ability to continue to provide services and care for those in our region, according to the message. Concho Valley Paws begging community for help. With shelter full, pet adoptions are free. By Rosanna Frere, published February 4th. With no empty kennels available at the animal shelter, Concho Valley Paws is begging the community for help by offering free pet adoptions for a limited time. On Wednesday, February 2nd, the nonprofit said they had zero empty kennels with more than 350 animals available to be fostered or adopted. A spokesperson for Concho Valley Paws said the number of animals at the shelter could impact San Angelo's ability to be a no-kill community. In 2021, the city of San Angelo and Concho Valley Paws celebrated a milestone identifying San Angelo as a no-kill community, meaning 90% of the animals left the shelter through local adoptions, out-of-state adoptions, and through return-to-owner programs. No kill is not a final destination. It's a way of doing business, Jenny Wilson, Concho Valley Paws executive director, said. Sometimes in a community with so many unaltered pets, keeping the no kill initiative alive can be a struggle. We are experiencing that now, Wilson said. Giving Your Heart Some X's and O's During American Heart Month by Kirthana Cabrera, MD, Shannon Cardiology, published February 4th. Is your heart getting all the TLC it needs? If not, February, American Heart Month, is the ideal time to commit to giving your heart more love and attention. Here are five ways to nurture your body's most important muscle and keep it pumping strong. 1. Take your heart for a walk. Staying active by simply putting one foot in front of the other is one of the easiest ways to help protect your heart. Walking is free, simple to do, and there's a low risk of injury. Most adults should aim for 30 minutes of moderate to intense activity, such as brisk walking, at least 5 days a week. But if you're pressed for time, you can break that up into 3 10-minute workouts. Get a doctor's okay before you start walking program if you have a chronic health problem like diabetes or high blood pressure, or you're over 40 and haven't been active for a while. 2. Feed your heart smart snacks. Instead of snacks packed with unhealthy fats, sugars, or salt, try heart-friendly options like these. Whole grain toast with peanut butter or almond butter. Cherry tomatoes dipped in hummus. Whole grain crackers with canned tuna or salmon. A fruit or veggie smoothie. Fat-free or low-fat popcorn. Fat-free or low-fat yogurt topped with berries. 3. Test your heart. High blood cholesterol can raise your risk of heart disease, a heart attack, or a stroke, but it usually doesn't cause symptoms, which is why adults 20 and older need their cholesterol tested on a regular basis. Ask your doctor how often to get yours checked. 4. Stress your heart less. When tension mounts, talk out problems with a trusted friend, family member, or counselor, and try to replace negative thoughts with positive ones. For example, replace "I've really messed up" with "everybody makes mistakes," or "I can't do this" with "I'll give it my best shot." 5. Tend to your heart with thanks. Research shows that practicing gratitude is good medicine for your heart and health. It can lower blood pressure and boost your immune system, and it can help you engage in healthy behaviors. To feel more thankful, try keeping a gratitude journal. Look for your blessings, big and small, and write them down. For more information on heart health, speak to your primary care provider or call Shannon Regional Heart Center at 325-481-2281. And now here is our weekly column from Allison Watkins. How to make shrub planting and pruning and care much more fun and less of a burden. Published February 5th. Shrubs are important foundations to many home and commercial landscapes and often get overlooked and ignored in existing landscapes. In some ways, this is the goal. Select and plant the right shrub and then let it be with minimal care. If the chosen plant is well adapted to the local climate, grows to the correct size at maturity, and is planted properly, shrubs should not need regular extensive effort to keep them healthy and attractive. However, shrubs often get too large because of poor plant selection and cover up windows, porches, and pathways, or are simply old and overgrown for the site. After many years, they need to be replaced or cut back to rejuvenate. This can cause shrubs to be a hindrance to an attractive landscape instead of adding to the home's beauty. Do some research when planting new shrubs to select dwarf, well-adapted varieties that will thrive and grow to a nice size and shape for the space. Some examples include dwarf Yaupon holly, dwarf Indian hawthorn, and dwarf euonymus. Another way that shrubs can be a burden in the landscape is extensive shaping and pruning. Again, choosing the right plant in the first place can greatly reduce the need for maintenance. Choose shrubs that grow to the desired size at maturity and let them stay in their natural shape and form to reduce or eliminate shearing and pruning. Unless every plant is pruned into the exact same shape and size, it can be very unattractive to sculpt shrubs into spheres and other shapes. Just because something is frequently done in many landscapes doesn't mean it's the right thing for every yard. Aesthetics and what looks good to someone is subjective. So do what works for you and what you enjoy. But don't feel like you have to keep up with the Joneses and keep shrubs molded and sheared just because it's done everywhere else. Personally, I enjoy the natural form with infrequent, light pruning in most cases. Shaped, hedged, sheared is generally a more formal look and is sometimes needed for a specific appearance or theme. One practice to definitely never copy is topping of trees. Topping is an unnecessary, poor pruning practice and is especially common in crepe myrtles. Not only does it not increase flowering of crepe myrtles, it can delay flowering and cause stress and structural issues. Save the date for the Spring EarthKind Landscaping Seminar, Wednesday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Tom Green 4-H Center. We will discuss best landscaping practices for the Concho Valley that promote beautiful, functional landscapes while protecting the environment and natural resources. Details to be announced. Visit tomgreen.agrilife.org. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.